The Mike Lupica Podcast.
We are back now with the great Mike Lupica. He's one of the country's
most prominent
sports
columnists. Mike Lupica has covered just about every sport.
Candid interviews with legends he calls friends.
I was talking to Jordan about Woods after the basketball game the other night. Everybody in sports to be the next this guy, the next this guy. And Michael said, no, he's the first Tiger.
In your face questions.
How much of a dope is he?
Compelling.
A $1 billion industry, the biggest we've ever had in sports in this country, often comes down to a flip of the coin.
This is the Mike Lupica Podcast. Here's Mike Lupica.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on another episode of the Mike Lupica Podcast. Today, we are joined by a former Florida congressman, current co-host of Morning Joe on MSNBC. He is my friend, Joe Scarborough. But before we get started with Joe, I want to let you know about Kronos. Okay, it's day one for a new employee. But instead of joining in productively, they face a confusing, disjointed process, piles of paper forms. With Kronos, you can automate the entire onboarding process, creating a better experience for employees and freeing you to focus on the human part of your job. HR, payroll, talent, timekeeping in one unified system, all with proven implementation approach and simplified, transparent pricing. Learn more at Kronos.com/onboarding. Kronos, workforce innovation that actually works. Welcome back to the Mike Lupica Podcast. We have not had my friend Joe Scarborough on for a while. We are always happy to have him as a guest. He is the co-host with his bride, Mika Brzezinski, of Morning Joe. And the world is filled with just two classes of people. People who admit they watch Morning Joe, or people like the President of the United States who act like they don't, but they do religiously. He is a former Florida congressman, and I'm so happy to have him on today because for Joe Scarborough right now, the emergency is not at the southern border. It's not because of the Mueller report. It's because of the Boston Red Sox. Joe, what the heck is going on?
You know, we learn, Mike Lupica, as we get older, that you learn much more in losing than you do in winning, and lessons that are learned by a well-timed loss actually usually helps a team win championships. I have a good friend who's a Cleveland Indians fan who a couple years ago kept bragging about their 21, 22, 23-game winning streak.
Yeah.
And I was like, no. It just doesn't matter in August and September. They need to lose some games. And sure enough, the Indians went into the playoffs and were bumped out pretty quickly. The Sox, you know, they're young, and they won a World Series, and you just can't help but think that some of those kids, and they're all kids now because of how old I am, some of those kids just started thinking that winning came naturally, and that you're always, your bats are always hot, your pitchers are always doing well, you're always going to figure out a way to win. And it's, you know, the first month of the season, it's really taught them a valuable lesson that will stay with them. And I think it will help them out in the long run. And I just keep telling myself what I told my friends who were Dodgers fans last year, who were freaking out in April and May and June and July. I kept saying, even at the All-Star break, they're the Dodgers. They've got the best team in the National League. You know what? The law of averages suggests they're going to be there at the end, and they were. Same thing with the Red Sox. They'll figure out how to get it all together. But right now, they're slowly learning that winning is not guaranteed.
Talking to my friend Joe Scarborough, and I promised Mr. Scarborough and I, though we could do an entire podcast talking about baseball, we will not spend the whole podcast talking about baseball. And Joe, while the Red Sox, who have basically only had one major injury to Nathan Eovaldi, scrape along at 10-15, here's the four bottom hitters for the New York Yankees last night as they end up sweeping the Angels. Mike Ford, Gio Urshela, Mike Tauchman, and Tyler Wade. And right now, the Yankees just keep winning.
They keep winning. You look at last season, and we've got now in our house, it seems that everybody gave everybody that wonderful picture of Ben Attendee looking like a ballerina in the World Series, leaping out with. And what's frozen behind him are the standings for the 2018 season, and you see the Red Sox 108, and you feel a sense of pride. But I got to say, Mike, I still think that perhaps the even more remarkable achievement for a team last year was the New York Yankees winning 100 games, being as banged up as they were. This is a team that, my gosh, healthy, could win 108, 110, 112 games. They have great young talent. And you're right. They just keep winning regardless of the injuries.
Joe, all right, let's shift to, obviously, your arena, which is politics. And I texted my friend, Mr. Scarborough, after they showed a picture of him on, I think, yesterday's show, playing the guitar with his band, but the T-shirt said, Morning Psycho.
Yes.
And where did Morning Psycho come? Oh, I know. The president of the United States, but basically saying that Mr. Scarborough helped get him elected, now calls him Morning Psycho. And Joe, I got to have that T-shirt.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But, you know, Donald, as we still call him, because we've known the guy for as long as we have, and it's hard to call him anything else. Donald watches our show every day. And everybody that works with him has long told us that. He told me when we were in the middle of a huge fight during the campaign, because we didn't talk for 6 months, but we did talk to him briefly, and he said, you know, my favorite part of the show when we're having a fight is when you turn to the camera and you go, hi, Donald, I know you're watching. And Trump himself would even laugh about that, because he said, and Trump would say, I'd be tweeting and saying, I never watch low-rated Morning Joe. It's the worst show on television. They're crazy. And you'd read it, and then you would turn to the camera and go, hi, Donald. How you doing? Hope you're doing okay. And Trump himself said he would break out laughing at that. But, yeah, he watches it every day. Omarosa told Mika this morning, he watches it every day. He's obsessed with it. He's especially obsessed with Mika. Said that, you know, when I insult him, when I attack his politics, it just sort of, you know, rolls off of him. He doesn't care. But the Mika attacks sting. So I never have known exactly why they sting him so much, but they do.
Joe, watching the show since the redacted version of the Mueller report came out, the thing that has offended almost your sense of honor is the way the Attorney General of the United States has acted, starting with his preemptive strike before anybody even got a chance to look at the redacted version.
Yeah, Barr has shamed himself for all of those people who said that he was going to be an honest player. And I had several high-ranking Republicans telling me that, even some Democratic lawyers saying they'd known him for 30 years and that we should be comfortable with him as Attorney General. We're dead wrong. This guy is a hack, and he is what the man that Donald Trump said he's been looking for years. He needs his own Roy Cohn. And he has his own Roy Cohn. You look at the letter and look how the words from the Mueller report were wrenched from their proper context, to use a phrase that William Rehnquist used at the Supreme Court. It shows such a blatant intellectual dishonesty that the man has revealed himself for being a political hack and not an attorney general. Now, that brings up a bigger point that, for several years, I've been talking about how the institutions, America's institutions, the checks and balances of Madisonian democracy, were going to check Donald Trump. And they have, for the most part, checked Donald Trump. I wouldn't go in and have a constitutional amendment to change one part of the government or another part. But I will say this. We have all seen over the past 2.5 years since Donald Trump's been president that the Attorney General, being appointed by the President of the United States and having the ability to basically give the President a clean bill of health when there's a cancer growing on the presidency is a danger. It's also a danger that you can have a president who ignores every subpoena from Congress, that's held in contempt of Congress, But then you have an attorney general who can decide not to prosecute the president or people in the administration who are found to be held in contempt of Congress. I really think we have to start looking at selecting our attorney generals the same way we have select our FBI directors, where they're selected for a decade and they work for the United States for 10 years. And I think there has to be a supermajority to both appoint an attorney general and also to remove him from office in less than 10 years. I think that is, for me, that's the one chink in the armor of Madisonian democracy that we've seen during the Trump administration that I think really needs to be fixed.
Talking to my friend Joe Scarborough, whose real status in my life is as the father of Jack Scarborough, who's probably the most loyal reader I have of the.
Oh my gosh, he loves your books. He loves it's a family thing with us.
So, Joe, you just referenced something that I promise I was about to ask you. You have been steadfast since Trump was elected president and saying what you just said, that the system would hold, okay, that our form of governance, the most enlightened form in of an advanced country in this world would hold. But isn't it fascinating, even to you, that someone who knows as little about government as Donald Trump does, and Joe, you know this, you could stump him on how a bill becomes law. Okay, if he ever gets on a stage with Bernie Sanders and Bernie Sanders actually questions him about healthcare, that would be a appointment viewing on television. But isn't it amazing how he seems to have found every soft place in democracy and exploited it for his own purposes?
He has. But you're seeing this happening across the globe. Populism is on the upswing. Ukrainians just elected a comedian that, as Richard Haas said this morning, would be the equivalent of us electing Stephen Colbert to be our president, a guy that has no experience, doesn't know how to run government. And that's one of my continuing concerns. And I will tell you, even though Barack Obama is brilliant compared to Donald Trump and certainly a far better leader, I had the same concerns with the Democratic Party selecting a guy who was a glorified state senator who, the second he got into the United States Senate, said he didn't want to be there. Harry Reid telling him you need to run for president because you don't like the job here, and ran for president without knowing how Washington worked. And you know, that caused problems over 8 years. And then we elect Donald Trump, who really didn't know anything about Washington or how Washington worked. But people, as they were with Barack Obama, people were swept up and they were excited and they wanted hope and change. And they got it. It was certainly a historic election and one that I'm glad went the way it did. But in 2016, they wanted to shake things up again. They got somebody with absolutely no Washington experience. Think about this, Mike. We've had three presidents in a row in the 21st century, in George W. Bush, Barack Obama, and Donald Trump, who didn't like Washington,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
Never. And they were proud of the fact they didn't like Washington, didn't really love the job they were in, the way that Ronald Reagan or George H.W. Bush or Bill Clinton loved the job. They didn't love the job. It was sort of an irritant. And you got the sense with all of them that if they really had their druthers, and I know this personally of Barack Obama and Michelle Obama from talking to their friends, if they had their druthers, they probably would have left after one term because they found Washington, D.C. so distasteful. Compare that with somebody like Bill Clinton, who loved his job, who lived his job, or LBJ, or Ronald Reagan, who loved it, dove in there, knew how Washington worked. It made a huge difference. And those three presidents that I just named, legislatively, were unqualified successes because they were real willing to roll up their sleeves, get their hands dirty, and figure out how to pass legislation. We don't have that with Donald Trump. Barack Obama was a historic president, but nobody can name a single piece of major legislation that he passed his final 6 years. And yes, you can blame the Republicans. You can blame Mitch McConnell. I blame the Republicans, and I blame Mitch McConnell. But, you know, they don't play by Marcus of Queensbury rules in Washington, D.C. They never have. If you walk into a boxing ring, somebody's going to try to knock your head off. And if you are president of the United States, the other party is going to try to make you a failure. The great presidents figure out how to work around that and get things done regardless. And for that to happen, Mike, we've got to start electing presidents again that love their job, that love how our crazy constitutional republic works, and knows how to make things run more smoothly in Washington. We haven't had that in the 21st century, and we've paid for it dearly.
We're talking to Joe Scarborough, and again, I won't possibly get to all the things I want to talk to him about, but it's okay, because I watch this show every day like everybody else is. But you know, Joe, you know this better than anybody. There was nothing Bill Clinton liked more than sitting in his office at 10 o'clock at night when he was trying to get things done, okay, and either calling somebody over to bang heads around or using impolite language with guys who were either on his side or on. He loved that. He loved he was an untouchables guy when it came to legislation. You know, they pull a knife, you pull a gun, you know, and that's the way he governed.
Well, he also, though, and he told me this once, 3 or 4 years ago when we were talking in a green room before we went out for a charity for vets. He said the single greatest attribute that a president can have or that a governor can have is a short memory. The only thing better than that is having no memory. And he was referencing Barack Obama at the time, who he thought took everything too personally. And I will tell you, with Bill Clinton, you could impeach the man on Tuesday. He would invite you to golf on a Wednesday. And David Marinus, in that great book, First in His Class, explained at the beginning of the Clinton presidency what made Bill Clinton such an unqualified political success, despite all of the scandals and controversies that always sort of dragged behind him. And that was, Marinus talked about how Bill Clinton lost a race for governor, I think it was.
Yeah.
In 76, perhaps it was. And the morning after the election, a couple of his campaign workers were looking out outside the window, and there was Clinton on the corner, shaking hands with everybody that was passing by. And one of the campaign workers turned to the other and said, poor guy, he doesn't even know that he lost the race.
Right.
And the other campaign worker turned back and said, no, you don't understand this man. He's already campaigning for the next race.
Yep.
The morning after the election, 2 years later, Bill Clinton elected governor of Arkansas. That's actually an incredible leadership quality that we need in Washington. Somebody that doesn't take it personally. Somebody that, yes, will get in there and fight and scrap, but will pick up the phone and call Republicans the day after they impeach him, or call Democrats the day after they say something personally insulting, and just work through it and figure out how to forge compromises and get 51 votes in the Senate and 218 votes in the House.
The great Joe Scarborough is our guest on the Mike Lubica podcast. Much more with Mr. Scarborough right after this from our friends at Geico. Okay, this is a 30-second commercial, and I'm going to throw a lot of numbers at you, but please stay with me, because if it doesn't confuse me, it's not going to confuse you. In just 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. This company has been offering great rates and great service for over 75 years. And anytime you need help, you can speak to one of their trained specialists 24/7. The company, of course, is Geico. Go to geico.com today. Sorry for all the numbers. And in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Oh, damn it, I'm out of time. Talking to my friend Joe Scarborough on the Mike Lubica podcast. Let me get back to Barr and the Mueller report for 1 second. Joe, do you think it was mission accomplished that his spin worked, or were once the thing was rolled out, were people too smart to buy into what Barr doing the bidding of the president had attempted to do with his preemptive strike press conference.
Barr made the classic political mistake that so many people make, so many day traders in Washington make, and that is he overpromised. He overpromised. He oversold what Mueller said in that report, and by doing that, he set himself up, and he set his president up for a bigger fall, because he set expectations so high that when the Mueller report came out, and you saw all the things the president did, there are 100 pages. Yes, maybe there wasn't collusion, which isn't even a legal standard, which Trump used to always say, and his lawyers right. used to say all the time. There may not have been collusion. There may not have been a conspiracy with the Russians, but there was 100 pages of dirty deeds done by Donald Trump and his family and his campaign workers. And when Americans saw that, at least independent voters, swing voters, were offended by it and put off by it. That's why his poll numbers have dropped to their lowest point in over a year or two. A Morning Consult poll came out yesterday that actually was the lowest that Trump's ever registered in their particular poll. So no, it was the work of a day trader, and as you know, day traders usually go bust.
Talking to Joe Scarborough on the Mike Lubega podcast. All right, you are people talk about lapsed Catholics. You are a lapsed Republican. For the moment, I am going to make you the speaker. Okay. And I'm going to ask you, if were you Nancy Pelosi, how would you play this right now on impeachment and with a general strategy to get Trump unelected in November of 2020?
I do exactly what Nancy Pelosi is doing. I will say, in my adult lifetime, I have never seen any political leader make as many consistently good calls as Nancy Pelosi has made since becoming Speaker of the House. Here's a woman who's been a progressive her entire life, has been seen as a member of the far, far left wing of the Democratic Party from San Francisco, has one of the most progressive districts in America, and yet she has spent all of her time dragging the Democratic Party to the electable center to make sure that Donald Trump is defeated in 2020. I don't know that history books will remember her as being as instrumental as she's being for the Democrats, but if Donald Trump is defeated in 2020, Americans who want to see that happen owe a lot to Nancy Pelosi. But I think the speaker's playing it just right, pitch perfect, where she's saying, now we're not going to get ahead of ourselves. We're going to look at what the Mueller report says. We're going to investigate, and we will let the facts lead where they lead, and has basically said there has to be bipartisanship in any impeachment process or it will be a failure. And that's what the Democrats need to do. The same polls that are showing Donald Trump's approval ratings plummeting are also showing that Americans are more steadfast in their belief that he should not be impeached, that they should be able to vote on whether Donald Trump stays in office or is out of office. And I brought up Bill Clinton. We impeached him twice. He left office with the 60% approval rating. Americans do not want Congress to undo what they have done at the voting booths, whether they like the president or not.
We're talking to Joe Scarborough on the Mike Lubega podcast, and this is just like later morning Joe today. Obviously, it's quite clear that Trump has a problem with smart, strong women. You've seen it in your own life, on your own show with Mika. But I think that plays into his, dare we say, frustration with the former Nancy D'Alessandro, who is, he doesn't like smart, strong women, and he certainly doesn't like it when they continually get the better of him.
Yeah, but with Nancy, he actually seems to fear Nancy. You know, I haven't seen any Nancy Pelosi nicknames. Have you? I mean,
No. He, the worst he does, Joe, is, you know, he calls her Nancy. You know, it's somehow only in his eyes is calling a woman by her first name sort of condescending.
You know this because you're a New Yorker, because you've known Donald. Donald Trump, and I hope this doesn't come as a shock to anybody that is listening to the Mike Lupica podcast right now. Donald Trump is a lifelong Democrat who has never had any use for Republicans. He's always been more in line, not only politically, but also socially with Democrats. He considered Bill Clinton to be a good friend. In 10 years, I never heard him say anything but positive things about Bill Clinton. He used to say very positive things about Hillary Clinton behind closed doors and also on TV. He gave money to Rahm Emanuel. He gave a ton of money to the DNC. He gave money to Chuck Schumer. He gave money to Nancy Pelosi. He likes Nancy Pelosi. And he relates to Chuck Schumer a hell of a lot than he will, more than he will ever relate to Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell might as well be from Pluto.
Or Mike Pence.
Let me tell you something. Donald Trump always spoke with contempt about people like Mike Pence. No use for him. No use for right-wing politicians in the past. Behind closed doors, he'd just roll his eyes. He is a Queens Democrat. He has always been a Queens Democrat, a centrist Democrat, a pro-business Democrat. This lurch to the far, far right only came about when he figured out that he could use birtherism and racism to gain a foothold in the Republican Party. And he saw the opening and he went for it, and that's how he rebranded himself. It was disgusting. But I'm still shocked that my party fell for it, my former party. It's why they're my former party.
Joe, as you watched, even as he says he, quote, won the Mueller report, the tweet storm has been epic over the last 4 or 5 days. And as you watch what he says and the things he says and the way he continues to bandy about the concept of treason, Joe, what won't he say and what won't he do to get himself reelected?
Well, that's a big question, right? I mean, we'll see. But I don't think he can get reelected. He's got a 31% reelect in Wisconsin. He's got a 31% reelect in Michigan. If he loses, let's just assume he wins Ohio, which I think he will. He wins Florida, which I think he will. He wins North Carolina, which I think he will, if all things remain the same between now and Election Day 2020. He's in such bad shape in Wisconsin and Minnesota and Michigan that those states are going to go for just about any Democrat. And so the battleground comes down to Pennsylvania, and Joe Biden's entry in the race certainly makes that a much more difficult slog for Donald Trump if Biden's the one that ends up being the nominee. So I think he has a real uphill battle. He's got 37-38% approval rating. Even on a good week, good month, he's at 42-43%. It's going to be really hard for him to get reelected president of the United States. And I just don't think he can do it.
Talking to my friend Joe Scarborough, the co-host of Morning Joe on MSNBC, which has become a political force of nature. Let me just ask you one thing, because you talk about how Barr shamed himself. All right. But Mitch McConnell has done the same. And Joe, isn't it, you talk about this all the time, isn't it frightening to you how quickly and how easily the judiciary of this country has been transformed? People aren't even paying attention to the judges that have been put in place during the 2 years of this man's presidency. And his unindicted co-conspirator on this is Mitch McConnell.
Well, I think Democrats that are running for president of the United States would do well in the primary to talk about Merrick Garland, and I'd even suggest that they should propose legislation, a Merrick Garland Relief Act, that would yeah. move the Supreme Court, number of Supreme Court justices from 9 to 10, until such time that situation is taken care of. It's been shameful how Mitch McConnell followed up on the bad acts of Harry Reid. And, you know, it used to be that it took 60 votes to get a judge through, and that, yes, that was frustrating, but it also made sure that extremists on the right and extremists on the left couldn't go sit on the sit in the federal judiciary. That safeguard's been taken away, first of federal judges by Harry Reid, and then with the Supreme Court by Mitch McConnell. And it's a dangerous step forward. And again, I think Democrats, if they get back in power, they've got the power to do it. Add another seat until such time that the court is equalized back again to where it was before McConnell refused to even give Merrick Garland a hearing.
Should these be lifetime appointments, Joe? I go back and forth on this sometimes.
No, I don't think so. I think James Fellows with The Atlantic has come up with a system where if every justice serves an 18-year term, that will mean that each president, once they start rolling it out correctly, each president will get two Supreme Court justices. And it won't be the luck of the draw. Too much is at stake.
Yeah.
For us to depend on a system where Supreme Court justices are appointed, and the Supreme Court makeup is based on how long somebody lives, how long somebody dies, and the timing of when all of that happens. I think 18 year, as Fallow says, if you give each one of the justices 18 year term, each presidential term will have two appointments, and you'll have everybody rolling off the bench before, you know, they get into their 80s.
Joe, we have to come up with a system where we don't have to pray so hard for Ruth Bader Ginsburg to live forever.
I know. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. But, you know, that's one of the things. That's another reason why Democrats need to stay engaged and make sure they get out and vote this time. They just didn't vote as much as they should have in 2016. They didn't mobilize the way they should have. So they have to follow up on their successes of 2018 and get out and vote, or else Donald Trump could get reelected.
Joe, what do you make of Biden's candidacy? I'm not going to ask you to endorse or not endorse anybody. I'm going to ask you about a few of the headliners in this thing, because they all seem to have strengths and weaknesses. Okay, what's Biden's greatest strength right now? But what also what's his greatest weakness?
Well, I think his greatest strength is that he should be a really good general election candidate if he gets through the Democratic Party. But that's the real challenge right now for him to get through the Democratic Party, the Democratic primaries. But you know Joe, I know Joe Bartikal. I mean, he's a great guy. He's a really likable guy, and if he can stay disciplined, if he can stay on message, if he can do the sort of things that he didn't do in the 1988 campaign or the 2008 campaign, he can win. But he needs to look at Barack Obama's campaign in 2008. Obama was so disciplined, and he controlled his message so carefully that it was hard to get Barack Obama in interviews where he was speaking off the cuff. Joe Biden needs to show that discipline. What's the best baseball analogy? I'm sure you have a good baseball analogy of a guy who was a great hitter, had a great swing, but he could not stop from swinging bad pitches. And that's sort of what's happened with Joe Biden in the past. He's swung wildly at times and embarrassed himself and hurt himself. So he just has to have a disciplined communication team and a disciplined communication plan where he squeezes every single word. But, you know, Barnicle interviewed him 2-3 months ago, had a 60-minute interview. I saw it. He asked him two questions. Biden did the rest.
All right. Here's my last question for my friend Joe Scarborough. Joe, When you're looking for someone electable, someone who can beat Donald Trump, okay? I'm not saying they can't be progressive, but do they not have to run somewhere close to the middle to get back the angry left behind white voters that Trump gobbled up in 2016?
Well, you know, this is tricky. It's tricky because Bernie Sanders actually did well with those angry white voters in 2016, and actually there were quite a few people who voted for Donald Trump whose second choice was Bernie Sanders. So it never fits quite so neatly, but I will say the Democrats are rolling the dice if they end up nominating Bernie Sanders, just because he's proudly declared himself to be a socialist his entire career. You look at Pete Buttigieg. Pete is a progressive guy, but he still knows how to speak to the middle of America. Barack Obama was a Republicans love to talk about how Barack Obama had the second most liberal voting record in all of the Senate for the 2 years that he was there before, or the 4 years he was there before he was president of the United States. But at the same time, Barack Obama knew how to inspire people, not only in middle America, but also in suburbs and in other areas where you usually don't have progressive candidates gaining votes. So that's really the key. It's sort of the opposite of what I always said about Republicans, that they needed to get candidates like Jeb Bush, who were conservative ideologically, but moderate temperamentally. And that used to be the key to success before Donald Trump. I really think, to contrast with Donald Trump, you do need somebody like a Mayor Pete or a Joe Biden, who can be progressive ideologically or centrist, but temperamentally they know how to reach swing voters in Wisconsin and in Michigan and Ohio and in Florida and in Pennsylvania. That's really the key to the election. And that's why I think Joe Biden or Mayor Pete right now fits more the profile of somebody that can win those upper Midwest industrial states. And that's where the election is going to be won or lost this year.
Thank you for doing this, my friend. I just think of this as the fourth hour of Morning Joe today.
Exactly.
And, you know, this is amazing, Joe. I just listened to you. I've known you a long time. You don't sound like a psycho at all. I mean, there's no measure or standard that you sounded like a psycho today.
I've got the T-shirt, though, so I must be.
Joe Scarborough, co-host of Morning Joe. And if you're not paying attention to his take on politics, you're missing something big. Thank you for doing this, my friend.
Thank you so much, Mike. I love being on the show.
And Joe Scarborough on the Mike Lubica podcast. It's been too long since we had him on, but we were happy to have him on today. It's why we're doing two a week, because we just never seem to run out of people to whom I want to speak. Continue to download, continue to subscribe, and we'll talk to you next week, everybody.
The Mike Lupica podcast is produced and distributed by Compass Media Networks in conjunction with Hiltzik Creative. For iPhone users, go to the podcast app and search the Mike Lupica podcast. Click on the Mike Lupica podcast icon and subscribe. For non-iPhone users, you can listen on Google Play Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast platform.